coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. Big issue tonight. It is our summer fun spectacular. It's been a summer of fun so far. We're talking about San Diego Comic-Con and getting to talk to some people we don't normally get to talk to. But tonight, yes, summer fun. Cole's idea for tonight's show, we kind of swap off the summer funds. This one is all Cole, so I'm going to let Cole, by the way, this is Hey Kids Comics. I'm Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Good evening, everybody. This is Hey Kids Comics 278.
278!
This is our annual summer fun issue. Falls whenever we get around to doing it.
It's in the summer, usually.
But it's, yeah, we try to have them in the summer. That one disastrous time, we had one in November.
And we did what we could, all right?
Yeah. You know, that's the way it happens. I mean, hell, we just published our third annual
in 7 years.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're making it happen. Nailed it. So, years ago, there was a – during the one of the indie booms, I think we're actually in an indie boom again right now.
I
think so. But there was the big indie boom when everybody was publishing and self-publishing, and there were all kinds of titles, some of them very deceptively placed in your – if you're a retailer in your previews, and if you're looking for Topps Comics, X-Files comic, right below it was from a company called Twist and Shout, X-Flies.
Yes,
their attempt to be a parody, and that – was often caught people off guard accidentally ordering a copy of X-Flies.
It
was a dreadful book. But dreadful doesn't necessarily limit itself to bad indie comics. But there was an indie book that I somehow wound up with called The Guide to a Non-Existent Universe or something like that.
Okay.
And basically, it was just sort of a parody of things like Marvel Universe and Who's Who, which by then were both in, I think this was during the era of the Ring Binder.
Yes, the Ring Binder.
Editions, yes, indeed.
It's cheap and out. You want to talk about the theme of our show tonight? Ring Binder entries, loose leaf entries into a Marvel, you know, the Guide to the Marvel Universe or the Who's Who to DC Comics, that falls into this category.
Oh, that's probably fairly true, especially at the point where Marvel just gave up the ghost on any kind of creativity in Marvel Universe. But I guess, you know, as sort of an antidote to this sort of thing, and parody was king during the big indie boom back in the day.
Right.
And I just distinctly remember there were some clever things in there, like Pull Yourself Together Man, who would basically just, like, all of his constituent anatomical parts would all come unraveled.
Right.
And all of the various systems of his body. But one of them, because of the block, the way they set it up, it was easy to misread, but it was a pair of villains, Misfit and Mr. Meaner.
Misfit and Mr. So, Misfit and Misdemeanor, but was Misfit, like, super, like, ripped?
She was super ripped and had four arms.
Oh. Oh. All right.
And Mr. Meaner had, like, the check out the big brain on Mr. Meaner.
Oh, damn it. Guys, come on.
But the reason I bring this up, the reason this is appropriate, the reason this has relevance, is not simply because this was just sort of a parody of how bad things can get, but all of the characters had write-ups. There were actually, some of them were very clever, and in this case, it talked about how these two got their powers and how they teamed up and everything and decided to go out as criminals, as Misfit and Mr. Meaner. And so just because you have superpowers doesn't mean you're good at coming up with names. And I think that really was the best way to set the stage for the latest Hey Kids Comics Summer Fun, the Diet Coke of evil.
Yes.
One little calorie, not evil enough. Because comics are replete with, you know, mad scientists and despotic rulers and galactic despoilers and, you know, your various, you know, sinister scofflaws.
Right.
And then you get the guys who are just like, did you think this was something you, you know, you always see those shows that'll come out with the dumb criminals, you know, where they try to, you know, get into the ATM with a baseball bat or something. And I guess this is, there are times when in the superhero, supervillain realm, this must happen, or really without any thought being put into it, you just get some really bad villains.
Here's the thing, right? So if you live, we always talk about what it would be like to live in a world with superheroes and super, you know, like in a super world, in a world of high strangeness, in a world where, you know, you'll believe a man could fly because he just, that's the guy that delivers your mail. But there has to be a flip side to that, right? There just has to be the guy that decides that he's going to, instead of finally buying that ice cream truck that was the dream of his for years, he's going to go into the super villainy business. You know, and those guys have to exist. You know, instead of the guy that might, you know, the parody guy that might sell weed on your block, now you've got the super villain selling weed on your, you know, everything gets supered up. And, you know, so there is an end of that spectrum that's just, I guess, too far down for us to talk about tonight. But what I really like about this topic that Cole came up with is the idea that these guys got, these are the, for me, it's the ones that get real close.
Yeah.
You know, it's the ones that just for whatever reason can't get over the hump to real arch villainy. Just right there, but just they either get, you know, they always say there's someone, you know, there's always someone better, there's always someone faster or smarter or more handsome, or, you know, just they were the one that had the one person ahead of them that got,
well,
all the
fame. I mean, to give an analog with actors and stuff, I mean, you know, what's his name? Roberts.
Eric Roberts?
Eric Roberts still gets acting work.
Oh, Eric Roberts.
So it's the same sort of idea.
So these are your, what you're saying is these are the asylum.
Yeah, these are like the Z-list villains.
Okay.
And a lot of times even the Z-listers, and I'll cite an example here, get into the high-profile group. And I can't help but think, you know, it just seems like maybe they got in for reasons other than their powers or their equipment or what have you. You look at Pastepot Pete, for example.
So let's look at Pastepot Pete.
You know, he would later become the Trapster. Better, you know, rolls off the tongue a little better. Still, the whole gimmick, you know, you're not Wile E. Coyote. Okay, put the glue away, find a different shtick, or go start working at Subway. Because, yeah, he was a charter member of, I think, was it the Sinister Six or something like that?
Frightful Four.
Frightful Four, yeah.
Medusa,
one of the number...
Wizard, Pastepot Pete, and I believe the initial...
Sandman?
What's that?
Was it Sandman?
It was either... Yeah, I think it was Sandman, because it wasn't, I was thinking it was Hoofy McStomperson, but I don't think that's right.
No, I don't think that's right, because I believe it was Sandman, because it begged the question, if you have Sandman, why is it just, you know, the Frightful Three just didn't work? But my theory is that he's related to somebody important. So it's kind of like Flounder in Animal House. You know, you can just envision Sandman, you know, when they're showing the slides of potential members, and here's Pastepot Pete, and Sandman's going, like, he's a legacy.
So you're saying there's people in this world that get in via nepotism. You're saying they just get to slide in.
Fathered in, literally. Like, maybe someone in his lineage had a better gimmick and a better shtick.
Okay.
And that's how he got where he is today.
All right. All right. I'm with that. I'm with that. But in honor of our Summer Fun Spectacular, where do you want to start? What do you got?
I think, well, among the, before the show, you mentioned a classic DC hero, a villain, rather.
Okay.
One, the aptly named Lawrence Croc.
Oh, God. Yes, yes. Lawrence, old Lawrence Croc.
Now, in all fairness, Lawrence Croc came into being in 1947.
Yeah.
And a guy in a mask predicting Casey Jones of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles seemed like a good idea.
Oh, God. Yeah. And I was, we were talking earlier. What did you refer to this guy as? What's his nom de guerre as far as you're concerned?
Sort of the, Lawrence Croc becomes sort of the ESPN of villainy.
Yeah, we're talking about Sportsmaster.
Sportsmaster, who apparently is so damned good at every event from the biathlon to golf, or what, as they call it in Scotland, golf, not the L. Yeah, you name it, he can play it.
This is what happens when Taskmaster becomes your PE teacher.
Okay, yeah. This
is, in a world of superhero, you know, in a world of supers, you got your Taskmaster, right, and your Deathstrokes. They got work. They're working for Argus, they're working for S.H.I.E.L.D., they're working for Hive, they're working for Hydra, whatever, right? They're highest bidder, you know, like we were talking about, there has to be an Angie's List for this in this world somewhere where, you know, people are bidding on these contracts.
Yeah.
But then you got your Sportsmasters, right?
Yeah, well, a Sportsmaster, I think the if Taskmaster was your PE teacher is perfect. Because, I mean, the man can bowl. And the man can, you know, he's good at, bowling. Was it bowling? Buck-buck.
Buck-buck. Dodgeball. That parachute thing that they don't let kids play with anymore in gym, but you would like
tetherball.
Like, all day tetherball. I mean, this guy's a beast.
He is aces at tetherball. The man can play football, American and English
at the same time.
That's right. So the idea with Sportsmaster is he's so good at all of these sports, he utilizes the sports and the requisite equipment thereof to go into a life of crime.
Why? That's my question.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you could have been on the box of every Wheaties forever.
You could have been a dodecalite if you wanted to be. They would have to invent sports for you to get gold medals at.
You would win the gold, silver, and bronze. All of them. Just.
I would like to see somebody, like, give him to, like, Grant Morrison. Give Sportsmaster to Grant Morrison. I want to see Sportsmaster hook up with Rip Hunter, go back to the first Olympics, and go toe-to-toe with Heracles. That's what I want to see. I want to see those events.
That I would like. I would pay money for that, too, because, you know, he would don those cestus that boxers wore back in the day before somebody invented boxing gloves. And boxing, and
you know, actual boxing.
Yeah, but I mean, he can go toe to toe with Marcus of Queensbury.
I think, yeah, he definitely, you know, like he should be the Vandal Savage of sports.
I know, and the thing about it is, he should have been Lawrence Hoyle, in my opinion.
Oh, he's making the rules, all the rules.
That's right. So there's actually the Muggerville analog is Hoyle.
Nice. I like it.
Excels at boxing and bridge.
Well played. I like this idea. This is a good idea. Jesus Christ. Bridge.
Well, you never know when contract bridge might come in handy.
That's true.
When playing a keeper.
But no, so like he totes around, you know, the javelin and the ball bat and the hockey stick and the hockey puck and the archery, you know.
Not at all. It's like, you know, he'll have a football and a and do crazy things like hit the football with a baseball bat.
it's great. Yeah. He definitely has earned a place on our list, you know, of also Rans.
Yes, indeed. I mean, you know, as sports masters go, he's the runner up. So
that's right. That's right. Just right there. And speaking of runners up, and while we're on the topic of, like, so you got guys like Craven, right? You got guys like Craven the Hunter, which I think is a widely underutilized character in the Marvel Universe. I think that they could really get into it and really make him into, you know, a legitimate. But he is the, if you're looking for hunters, you know, he's the top. He's getting those contracts. But there are others in those lists, and I'm not even going to include characters like Barracuda, or not Barracuda, Tarantula.
Okay, yeah.
Non-seminal Spider-Man villain Tarantula. Wolverine falls into that category, right? When you're talking about people that are really the trackers and hunters, Red Wolf. These guys are right there. If you need somebody found, if you need to, you know, these are your guys. A character that we have talked about in the past that just, again, really focused. Just wait. If he was on Shark Tank, they're out because it's too focused. You know, it's way too niche. And we've talked about him before on the show, none other than Beard Hunter.
Oh, Beard Hunter. Yes, indeed.
One of my favorite characters in wacky, wacky Doom Patrol world. Beard Hunter, who couldn't grow a beard, was shamed into having this bizarre psychosis / obsession with hunting down the best beards. Beard hunting for hire.
Son of, well, that's right. That's how he ran afoul of the Doom Patrol, was he was hired to obtain the beard of Niles Calder, wasn't
yes.
he?
Yes, he was hired to obtain the beard of Niles Calder.
That's sort of like trying to get the crest of Birdman.
Listen, a sentence that I absolutely love to say out loud is hired to take the beard of Niles Calder.
I mean, it kind of puts me in the mind of Hipster Terminator, too.
God, Hipster Terminator. Somebody write this stuff down. We need to remember Hipster Terminator for our Muggerville 7 reunion show that we're going to have Monday.
Hipster Terminator was created back in the days, the all-too-brief days of Hey Kids Comics Live. And we were leaving the studio.
God,
and
I'm wearing the shirt right now. I'm actually wearing the shirt right now. It's
about the irony. This little pop-up selling all kinds of, like, freshly made screen-printed shirts and local art and raw color and local color and raw coloring, and as I say, and one of the proprietors was wearing what I believe must have been the most gorgeous cardigan.
Oh, just perfect. It was a perfect cardigan.
He looked me in the eye and said, get me his cardigan. And so I envisioned just walking up to the guy and saying, I need your hat, your glasses, your cardigan.
So funny.
Get your beard.
It was perfect. It was perfect.
Just imagine, like, the Schwarzenegger Terminator with this, like, you know, beard freshly torn off the face of a human, just, you know, glued on with the errant blood.
Well, then it became like
cardigan.
Then it became him, like, pulling out and chasing us on a penny farthing, like.
That's right. So, yeah, that did sort of remind me of another Beard Hunter, but yes.
Beard Hunter. Beard Hunter. Goddamn Beard Hunter. All right, so what do you got? I wanted to get Beard Hunter out early, so.
And in honor of the fact that I'm two episodes away from finishing the second season of Luke Cage.
Oh, God, how are you still watching it? How have you not finished?
It's like after midnight. They were two away, and Catherine was like, another? I'm like, no, because at the end of that one is going to make me want to watch the other one, and I can't be up in the morning. So I'm going to give you a Defenders villain, or a villain that got his start in 1984, the Defenders, none other than self-proclaimed mass destructionist Cuckoo Kajub. I'm talking about the Walrus.
Oh, yeah, baby. The Walrus, the only thing he's good for is property damage. That's pretty much
it. He just likes to destroy things. He's not interested in your money or your cardigans, unless he can destroy them.
Your cardigans.
Your cardigan. But he's just this rotund guy, apparently with some considerable amount of super strength and speed, or at least he claims to have had the proportionate speed, strength, and agility of a walrus.
Which, I mean, I saw Tusk.
I was going to admit.
You got to be quick to those jokes. You got to be quick to those jokes.
In reality, the walrus is a pretty hefty mammal, and could probably kill a man if it wanted to, but mostly they don't want to. That's the only thing that keeps us safe from walruses.
But mostly they don't want to.
Mostly they don't want to.
Lucky us, they don't want to.
His shtick was he just liked to trash things. He's like a petulant child.
Well, I think it was an inside job for damage control. That's what I think. I think that you know, it was job justification for damage control.
Oh, so like they would just field him whenever the budget office got a little...
Yeah, when times got slow. When the Rhino wasn't wrecking New York or the Juggernaut wasn't out in Westchester, they would bring him in. That's what I think.
Well, you know what I think?
No.
I think his pal, Mr. Fish, needs to be in season 3 of Luke Cage.
Wait, who?
Mr. Fish.
I'm afraid I don't know who Mr. Fish is.
Appeared in Power Man number 29. Apparently, he and Walrus hooked up at one point as partners.
Oh, really? I almost had Walrus on my list, and then I jumped off of that train a little bit. There's so many, though. There's so many.
Well, apparently Mr. Fish was just a petty thug, but he got mutated and became fish-like in appearance.
So I know we're... This is summer fun, forgive me. Since we're on the topic of Luke Cage, did you make it through episode 10 yet?
I think so, because like I said, we're just two out.
Episode 10 is the Danny Rand episode.
Oh, yes. Yes.
To tell me that wasn't the Iron Fist that you want in the next Iron Fist.
We were talking about the fact that, you know, thank God they've learned the lesson that castrating your heroes is not what people are looking for in a superhero show.
And number two, tell me you don't want a Heroes for Hire show with Power Man and Iron Fist.
Oh, I'd so put that on a shirt.
Like them fighting side by side, the fastball special.
All right, well, I'll tell you right now what I want.
Okay.
I want Iron Fist season 2, because now that they've given us at least some hope, I want Iron Fist season 2 to introduce Wen Shang-Chi.
Oh, come on, Master it has Kung. To, right? Like, you've got to do it at some point. The good news is you're going to get some Daughters of the Dragon business out of next season, so you're going to get some real hardcore Misty Knight Colleen Wing stuff. So that's awesome. Nice, yeah. I want to move out of the casual standard. Like I said, kind of just the grizzlies and the armadillos. Because I mean, we could talk about the grizzlies and the armadillos all day. One that crossed my mind, though, that I did want to bring up and discuss. I don't know if you feel like this guy falls into this category or not, because he had a pretty big shot and he took it. Okay, but I can only remember him having one real shot, and that is the Ten-Eyed Man.
The Ten-Eyed Man with eyes in his fingers.
Finger eyes. Old finger eyes.
Imagine how Bill Fingerbang would have.
God, I'm so glad we have JasonMimosa.com now. I could not be happier that we have JasonMimosa.com. But do you think that he falls into this?
Oh, absolutely. Because as I recall, I remember the first time I ever encountered the Ten-Eyed Man was in the Who's Who. And if memory serves, it's something to the effect of, like, he goes blind but gets sensory apparatus in all 10 fingers.
Essentially, yes. That is absolutely accurate. He has his fingers wired up with eyeballs so that he can see out of his hands, which just doesn't feel like something that would work real well.
Oh, exactly.
That feels like Elon Musk making a flamethrower. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, the flamethrower you can get at Home Depot.
Yes, right. Right. Feels like the potato gun of supervillains. Like, you, just because you can do it doesn't mean it's not still a waste of your time.
Well, yeah, you really needed Jeff Goldblum there to say, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
I mean, no, can I full stop after you just needed Jeff Goldblum?
That's true.
It doesn't matter. You just need Jeff
Goldblum. And speaking of just needing Jeff Goldblum, when the hell am I going to get my Grandmaster action figure?
Well, you can make one now.
That's true.
Because you have an Ian Malcolm action figure that you can now just, you know, as soon as that hits the market, eBay is going to be rife with customs for the Grandmaster. Oh, man. All right. What else do we got? What's next? Come on, let's hear
it. You brought an interesting one into the mix.
Okay.
Who I really wouldn't have thought about as, like, a bad villain until I got looking at the reasons you did that. And it's none other than, like, a refugee from the Warlord of Mars, a great white ape wearing a Lorca Segmentata from ancient Rome. Our good friend, the confused primate that has been part of comics since 1939.
Yes, yes.
Actually, yes. Created by the very folks who created Superman, the Ultra Humanite.
My thing is, in a world where super smart monkeys, there's literally a country in the DC universe of super smart monkeys. Apes. I'm sorry, Cole. I know that you're a stickler. Super smart apes. Your grods. What do they call it? It has a name. Do you know the name of whatever, you know, the World of Tomorrow Apeverse is over there?
Oh, no. I'm not familiar with that.
Whatever Gorilla Grodd's, like, sovereign.
Because he came from Gorilla City.
That's right. That's right. I think that's what it is. Okay, at least there's a city of smart gorillas.
Yeah, I mean, they had a whole city. They even had a king.
Yeah, they got it all. What makes you want to, at that point, dive into the idea of smart gorilla-ing? Which, by the way, smart gorilla-ing is a pastime of the DC Universe. If that tells you anything about the DC Universe.
Well, you know, if there's one thing people love, it's clever apes.
They do. They love a clever ape. Yeah, but this is supposed to be, and he had a couple Justice Society type, Justice League, Justice Society wins, and he's one of those, and I agree with you, Cole, on this, there has to be some nepotism, or he's just always around.
Well, I think the thing about it is, people love the clever apes. Who wouldn't want a big white gorilla, you know, cosplaying as Mark Anthony?
With a giant, just a giant head.
Yeah.
Just huge,
yeah,
huge
it
head.
Looks like, you know, the love child of Humpty Dumpty and the gorilla. It's like Tarzan's mom had an affair with Humpty Dumpty.
That's great. That's great.
Mom. But at any rate, he starts out as just this bald or balding scientist, this mad scientist who wants to rule the world, gets paralyzed, and then decides I don't know. Maybe I'll just put my head in my brain in the body of a gigantic white gorilla. For reasons. And the reason that he, you know, that's a good reason for him to fall into the Diet Coke of evil. Unless you've read, The Golden Age?
He's had some wins, like I said. Make no mistake. Yeah. The guy's won a few. It's like Dr. Light.
That was pure evil there. But for the most part, yeah, he's it's hard to take some of these guys seriously.
It really is. It really is. Just a smart ass ape, though. Like, come on, man.
I mean, he's like a, you know, it's fun to see Monkey do science things. But
shit. Monkey do science things. That's Cole's next TED Talk, by the way. Monkey do science things.
I'll be on the TED stage on September 14th. For Monkey do science things. We're gonna let that out right, but you know, why not? I think people need to know so they can plan ahead.
It's gonna be at San Diego Comic Con next year.
That's right.
Monkey do science things. A history of super smart apes in comics. Just be ready for it. So you're right. Now, in that same category is my favorite entry of all. And this is, you know, smart guys that just aren't quite smart enough. You know, guys that have proven their intelligence, but just couldn't get there. Couldn't get there. And for me, the biggest offender in this category is none other than Burns and Claremont created most specific assassin ever. And that's one Arcade.
Arcade, yes, the poor man's Scaramanga.
Right. I mean, I was thinking about this, and then it dawned on me. So Arcade, if you're not familiar with Arcade's shtick is he is a hitman / assassin for hire / evil genius who, instead of making it look like an accident, builds elaborate death trap games that he then puts his targets in and then makes them play the games and then they're dead.
Yeah.
Who is this for?
Well, the thing about it is, you think about average street value to just get somebody to bump off a rival or a loved one, formerly loved one.
Sure.
What are you talking, you know, in the, you know, anywhere from 50 to 300 grand.
Sure, why not? I don't know what the going rate is, but we'll call it that.
I don't know. I saw an episode of Law and Order one time or something. So, you know, if Jerry Orbach says that's the going rate, by God, it's the going rate.
I saw an episode of Jerry Orbach. If Orbach says go, goddamn
it. That's right. So, if you look at the production values on Arcade.
I'm sorry. I want to change the title of this episode to What Orbach Says Goes, damn it.
That's right. The Diet Coke of Evil or What Orbach Says Goes, damn it. So this isn't community theater level. This is like hardcore Hollywood, auto animatronics, laser guided, tech out the wazoo.
Sure.
So, yeah, you're like, who wants to spend that much money? I could kill him myself for that and save a lot for enjoying him being dead.
The idea
was, you know, he was supposed to be like this super high-paid assassin, but he was going to have fun with it, too. And, you know, presumably the burgeoning snuff film industry had some role, but... You know, at what point are your clientele so rich? I mean, you know, at that point, just lure your arch nemesis out onto a land deal and Dolores Claiborne him.
No, but like, you know,
it's cheaper.
You're right. You're right. And we were talking offline about who this is for. And Cole and I have a really, really...
Now, I'm going to have to give credit where it's due. This was all you.
The only...
I may have extrapolated on it, but by God, you hit this one out of the park.
So the idea is, how does any of Arcade make sense, right? Because for time immemorial since 1978... he's been setting up these ridiculous death traps that constantly, because he doesn't just have an adamantium bullet and a 50 caliber Barrett and he puts it in a Wolverine's skull and calls it a day, constantly is thwarted by whoever he decides. Like, you know, whether it be the X-Men, whether it be Spider-Man, whether it be Captain Britain, just constantly getting overthrown, right?
Yeah.
It never works. It never works. So I'm like, how can this possibly work? Who gains? Who's fronting his money? How does he gain from this? And the only thing that I can figure is it's being filmed remotely by Mojo and being beamed out for ratings, and that's who's backing him. That's all I
know. Yeah, Arcade is just an ongoing show.
Yeah, it's just an ongoing show on Mojo World. It solely exists for the ratings. So, you know, all of these are just games. Doesn't matter whether they live or die at the end of the day, because it's all for ratings. That's what I think. That's what I think. I think it makes sense. That's all I know.
Oh, absolutely. I think it, you know, that I would love to see. I'd like to see that extrapolated upon and turned into a book.
Oh, I agree.
That would be kind of cool because it would, I mean, you know, the character has an X-Men pedigree.
He does. You're right.
So it works very well that Arcade is just a tool. He's like Mongo. He is only pawn in Game of Life.
He's only pawn in Mojo's Game of Life.
That's right.
Yeah, I really like coming up with Arcade and then really thinking about it and just like how bizarre a character that is. I can't think of another character, another villain more bizarre than Arcade. He makes less sense than anyone.
Well, it's just a lot of work.
Yeah.
Goes into something that, you know, for a lot less money, Johnny the Face over here will just, you know, walk up behind him on a dark street and bang.
Well, we were just talking about the Grandmaster, right? When you're a giant cosmic entity, like, it makes sense to pull these games off, right? Contest of Champions, etc.
Because, you know, as an immortal, you're getting bored after a while. You've seen it all. And as an immortal, you can't do like in cartoons and shoot yourself because you've seen everything.
Right. You can't Highlander yourself.
That's right.
But this makes, you know, but you're not an immortal. You're just a dude with a goofy bow tie and a bad suit setting giant death traps. It makes no sense. It makes no sense.
And you know, the thing about it is, as the story goes, his initial victims were, you know, he was a hired assassin, and they were like the types of people that you would want to knock off, like corporate rivals or...
Sure, sure.
You know, maybe third world dictators, who knows? But they were like, they weren't the kind of targets that were going to, when faced with, like, say, the Lady in the Tiger Hall... Where, you know, behind one door is a lady, probably with a gun, and behind the other is a very hungry tiger. They would just, like, take option three and punch a chug hole in the wall and walk through that.
Right. They would take option three and Jean Grey would make your corpuscles in your brain explode and then you're dead.
So, you know, I think he got a little full of himself.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
and spent on the order, I think if you look in adjusted dollars at the giant spiked ball pinball machine, Battlestar Wars 1999 set with flying spaceship drones firing dangerous lasers at Banshee, the aforementioned lady in the tiger room, hiring some like insto hypnotist to convince Pyotr Romanov,
yeah.
Rasputin, rather, that his that Lenin got it right. Basically,
Grow the beard, Peter. Grow the
beard.
Yeah,
just, you know, taking him out of himself and turning him into proletariat as a means by which to destroy his teammates. You know, I think we're talking on the order of about $500 million was invested in that. And the only thing that makes any sense is your scenario in which Mojo is putting up the geld.
Well, and you know, there you can draw a direct line to Jigsaw from the Saw movies.
Yeah, that's true.
Just dumber. Just because, again, Carrie
Jigsaw
always...
serious money there, too. I mean, granted, you know, hacksaws and ball-peen hammers aren't as expensive as, say, giant pinball machines, but you're still putting out a lot of money unless you go to a shit ton of garage sales.
Carrie Elwes doesn't have ocular laser beams that can knock a mountain down. God, I wish he did, but he doesn't. So, yeah, let's move on from this guy.
He wish he did, too.
Who's your next choice for us there, Coley Cole?
Well, you know, the thing about it is everybody in comics loves it. And then they love it when you get a character, a familiar character, and you put a twist on it. Like, say, you know, Jane Foster as Thor, or you know, Lady Deadpool, or X-23 as, like, the Wolverine for girls.
Okay, okay.
And then there are times when it's just like, seriously? You know, on the hero side of the fence,
Miss Thing?
Oh, that's right. It was Miss Thing.
Thing.
But Lady Stiltman. So let's take somebody who belongs on this list already.
How dare you? First of all, how dare you? Second of all, how dare you?
And then let's let a crazy woman take over the mantle as Lady Stiltman.
So okay. I know that Lady Stiltman...
The name alone is like Lady Stiltman.
I know that Lady Stiltman exists, right? But I just don't know the story of Lady Stilt... I don't know why it's necessary. You know, Stiltman is the greatest supervillain of all time. Why is there a Lady Stiltman? It just makes no sense to me.
Well, you know, that the question can be begged about nearly damn near everybody we're going to talk about tonight.
But, That's true.
But, yes, Lady Stiltman just defies...
all reason.
Yeah, and depending on, you know, which incarnation, you know, apparently her stilt legs are much more flexible.
Oh, so she took our advice.
Yeah, it looks like she's gotten much more play in the legs than...
It's sad. Lady Stiltman is a sad addition to this list. It doesn't even want me... I don't even want to talk about it.
Of course, she was part of Villains for Hire.
Oh, was she? Okay.
The Masters of Evil.
No, she's not a Master of Evil. They really need to work on their hiring practices.
Maybe, again, legacy.
That's an absolute legacy, isn't it? Like, they're like, well, she is carrying on the Stiltman mantle, so we got to give her a shot.
Fairness, she may have come out of, I don't know if she originated in, but she's fought Deadpool. But then she started out in Amazing Spider-Man in 2010. Apparently, Deadpool did the right thing and just removed a manhole cover in her path.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah.
That's a smart move.
Spider-Man himself said that she was trying too hard.
That's sad. When Spider-Man tells you you're trying too hard, that's sad. Can we talk about somebody else that's trying too hard?
Sure.
I read a really disturbing piece of information on this character. So, the king, the cosmic king of trying too hard, the Beyonder.
Yes. The Beyonder.
The thing that I read was an anonymous quote about the Beyonder that said that inner office conversation during around the time that the first Secret Wars had come out, and it was, you know, was wrapping up, was that a certain editor-in-chief created the Beyonder, because I believe it was created by this one.
Oh, he most assuredly was. So.
Yeah. Was created because that is as an analogy for himself.
Oh yes, yeah. You can
kind of read into that when you follow, right? Like,
there's definitely a vibe. I mean, it was literally first person shooter.
God damn it! That's been our show, ladies and gentlemen. Join us next week for more. Hey Kids Comics, I'm going to go take a 4-hour bath and wash that joke off of me. Though it was maybe the perfect joke. Might have been the perfect joke, Cole.
Might well have been, but sometimes, you know, we pay a price for those.
I'm mad. I'm mad at you. I am first-person shooter. Cosmic, literally all the cosmic power in the universe. And what do you use it for? You grab up a bunch of heroes and villains, you put them on a weird battle planet, and and let them go at it for a while. You know, you got Doom, you got Ock, you got Kang, you got
Molecule Man.
Oh, God, that's another one. I can't figure out whether I want to put Owen Reese on this list or not, because I really like Owen Reese, because Owen Reese never wanted to hurt nobody. That's Owen Reese's thing, right? Like, he's just like, I just want to be a dude. Like, I don't want to do any of this stuff, but you are the most powerful person in the, you know, in the Marvel Universe. I don't care. Like, don't make me do shit. Because if I do shit, you're not going to like it. Like, for instance, look at me. Now look at Mount Rushmore. Now look back at me, and now I'm on Mount Rushmore. Is that what you want? Is that what you want?
Is that where we were headed with all this?
Because he did that. He did that shit. No, but Beyonder by far. Because, you know, you got Secret Wars 1. He's such a jackass that he created the Venom symbiote. Like, that's how much of a jackass he is. But begging the question once again, in one of the greatest callback jokes of all time for Hey Kids Comics, why wasn't Thor's helmet a symbiote as well?
I'm waiting for it.
Somebody needs to answer that goddamn question.
I'm waiting for the.
There's got to be a reveal in there at some point. There's got to be.
Like the Thorpian or something like that.
But then, again, massive unlimited power, right? Goes to Earth, finds Luke Cage, and uses that power to become a giant Afro-having black dude. In one of the most racist things I've ever seen.
Forgotten to mention that in our issue on race in comics, because that was the biggest. I mean, I'm white, and I know that's wrong. I was offended as a white boy.
That needs to be the title of a show. I'm white, and I know that's wrong. Come on. Oh shit, that's good. That's real good. Beyond a shadow of a doubt. Deserves to be on this list. You know, later we find out that...
Well, he basically kidnaps everybody, throws them all onto this planet, which supposedly is, like, made up of chunks of all these other planets.
Right, right.
So it's like a really one of those guys that goes to the party and they have the tapas bar out there, and he just takes a bite out of something and puts it back.
Oh, God, yeah, that's gross. I don't like that.
But it's like if Galactus was that guy, that's what the Beyonder was doing. And somehow, supposedly, like, one of those chunks was from, like, regular Earth. Like, proper our Earth, and right. There was a spider woman of some kind there. Again, in that weird way that Marvel is kind of, I don't know.
Like, whatever.
Talk about the Diet Coke of evil.
There's a Spider-Woman. She's wearing a white and black costume. Never worry about
it. It was more just the Coke.
Just don't worry about it.
I'm editor-in-chief. Woohoo, blow. But the Beyonder, you know, fails miserably at this secret war. that ultimately becomes pointless and ineffectual.
Did it start as being pointless and ineffectual, though? Like, from Jump Street?
But we were duped into thinking this was going somewhere. And then a couple of years later, decides to come to Earth and just, like, dick around with everybody. Like, hired Matt Murdock as his lawyer.
For what?
I don't know what the but the whole thing revolved around a poorly conceived story of Matt Murdock getting his sight back.
Right. Like, this was like
Tainer.
Miracle on 34th Street meets again, I get Requiem for a Dream. Like, it's just bad. Just bad. Like, this is what your life could be. Like, I'll give you your sight back if you That's represent okay. me.
Yeah, you know what? I think I'll just go ahead and jump off the bridge.
Yeah, every time a bell rings, shut up. I'm going, like, I'm done with
here
you.
Go. Maybe my screams as I fall to my death will drown out that bell, so shut up. And speaking of shattered dreams...
A couple other things. He tries to use his Beyonder powers to make Dazzler fall in love with him as well.
Oh, that's right. There was just this whole steady stream of just doing super dickery and none of it...
douchebaggery. Just real douchiness.
And just asshattery on a stick.
So much... Okay, he was such a douchebag that Mephisto sent demons after him, okay? Let me reiterate that. He didn't try to take over hell. He didn't do anything on Earth besides become a professional wrestler, try to get Dazzler to fall in love with him, hang out with Luke Cage in the most racist way possible, and give Daredevil the gift of sight. But he was douching it up so bad that Mephisto was like, I gotta get him out of here.
Yeah, I mean, even Loki was pissed.
Yeah, they all were. They all were like, why the hell are you here?
That's my shtick.
Yeah. He's like, you're doing it better than me, mainly because nobody gives a shit it's you. Nobody assumes you're doing anything untoward because you're an idiot. Like, that's great. All right. What else you got?
Okay. Two words.
Oh, God.
Composite Superman.
Oh, God damn it. Okay. Why? Damn it.
I mean, okay, let's just say you want to have a villain who's half Superman, half Batman, to the point that it's literally one half of each of their costumes stuck together, which makes the most awkward cowl in the world.
Yeah, it does. You're right.
And then, well, that's not enough. Let's make him green.
What was the green?
Just so no one will mistake him for Superman or Batman. But wait, that's not enough. Let's make him a shapeshifter.
Oh, God. Makes me want to throw up.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and give him, like, every power in the Legion of Superheroes catalog. Why stop there?
I don't know enough about composite.
It's almost, they keep heaping things on. It's like, now how much would you pay? You just expect Billy Mays to come out. This is Billy Mays for Composite Superman! You've never had a Superman and a Batman matchup like this before!
Billy Mays! Oh, Jesus, he's dead!
too soon!
He's dead.
That was creepy. He's dead.
Just like he's dead. Yes. God, composite. Jesus Christ. So there's one more. I got like one more, and that's it. And we're almost out of time anyway. And the one more that I got, you got for every Carmine Falcone. For every Hammerhead, Kingpin.
Oh, Hammerhead.
Hammerhead. I'm sorry, but Hammerhead was a successful mob boss villain. I'll give him
that. And when he got pissed off at people, he could charge them like a pachycephalosaurus.
For every Tombstone, for every Penguin, there's a Slug.
Oh.
Slug. Hailing from Miami's, Florida. What the hell? Hailing from Miami, Florida. The Slug. Basically, the Slug was Kingpin with zero muscle. He literally had, like, the Kingpin, you underestimate because he looks like just a big fat guy until you fight him. And then once you fight him, you're like, oh, I get it now. I get it now. He's just all muscle. No, he's just fat. This one is just 1,200 pounds of fat with a drug organization to rival, you know, what's the guy's name in Colombia? I can't remember.
Oh, like El Chapo.
Yeah, like something like that. Which begs the question, and Cole asked it earlier, how far down are you as a criminal mercenary that you hire on to work for the Slug? Because he ain't doing nothing. They took him to the raft, and I got to imagine that they did it on a giant raft, because he ain't moving. He ain't doing it himself. So you're doing all the heavy lifting, guys. You're doing all the heavy lifting. So how far down the rung are you when you're working for the Slug? And the Slug, here's the thing about the Slug, is he has a vast history of being a criminal kind of mastermind. Maybe if he just actually gets it, you know, Atkins, keto diet, whatever you need, man, drop like 300 pounds, then you'll be down to 900 pounds. Never mind, it's not going to work.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to work.
No health there.
No. Oh, God. So what else you got? The Slug's like my favorite. I have a bunch of comics with the Slug. I have the Web Spider-Man Annual 4 from the Evolutionary War somewhere around here that he was in. And you really, seems super intimidating till you open it and he's just kind of spilled out over a couple lawn chairs in a Hawaiian shirt in Miami somewhere. And you're like, what am I reading now?
Yeah, you just, I mean, you literally, what you see is what you get with the Slug, and that's a shame.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I want to close, because one of the things that this, talking about, like, the Secret Wars and Crisis on Infinite Earths was also coming to mind, and there was a comic book character that has been around a long-ass time, I think created back in the Silver Age. First time I encounter this character is in the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Uh-oh.
And then, of course, subsequently, you get to see the character in Who's Who.
Sure.
First appeared in Showcase 39 way back when, in July 1962.
The
back
Casey
before
Kasem.
I was even born.
This is the Casey Kasem voice.
Which is one of the nice things about doing this show is sometimes I get to talk about characters who weren't around before I was. And, in this particular case, you had a situation where a scientist's own creation becomes his undoing and, you know, inadvertently the father of a supervillain of some considerable power.
Okay.
Because apparently this guy was working with, he was like a chemist or something, and he's working with all kinds of volatile chemicals trying to, I don't know, to me it struck me as like when I had a chemistry set, and we just tossed the instructions and just saw, I wonder what will happen when we mix these things together. We had no idea what we were doing, but thankfully the people at Testers did and didn't put anything together that you could inadvertently do this, and that is every time whatever he was working on failed him.
Sure.
He had, because he was striving to better humanity, to remind himself of his own failures, he created this gigantic acrylic, vaguely humanoid shape.
Oh, no.
As a vessel into which to pour all of his failed experiments.
Why would you and do that?
That alone
what
is the
that?
Height of hubris. But It's just like a constant reminder. So this you know, volatile, just acrid thing is, and it must have taken years to fill the thing up.
Well, yeah, for sure.
And so it's painfully obvious that the creator of this super villain, though not a super villain himself, belongs side by side with his creation in the Hall of Shame, because the man filled what I estimate to be like a volume of liquid greater than that to house Shamu at SeaWorld.
Are we talking
hundreds of thousands of gallons of various failed chemistry experiments that created the living toxic pile known as chemo.
I was going to say, are we talking about chemo here? Because it sounds like we're talking about chemo here.
Yeah, chemo resembled a caricature from the funny papers in translucent acrylic, filled with a yellow-green, you know, it was like a, you know, like the giant mellow yellow man or something, or for those of you old enough to remember, it was like he was chock full of Rondo. Look it up, kids. Rondo was a goddamn good drink, and I wish they'd bring it back.
Jesus, Rondo. Rondo was a goddamn good drink.
Rondo is like the non-alcoholic version of Zima.
Oh, shit.
So you have basically this mix of chemicals becomes proof of concept for, you know, the primordial ooze creating life, because suddenly not only does the, you know, 650,000 gallons of assorted liquids, acids and bases and what have you, noble gases, only after he ate a burrito, not only does it become sentient, it's able to animate the vessel into which it's been poured. So it's like if one of those boot-shaped beer glasses from the from Walter Mitty suddenly started doing the boogie just of its own accord, because there was some six-month-old beer in the bottom of it.
Well, it's like if there was a clipping of Swamp Thing and you put it on that Bob Ross chia pet by accident.
That's right. And suddenly, not only became come to life, but it was decidedly pissy about the world, and it was actually part of the villain war in
Muggerville.
Nowadays, it now appears as a toxic fountain in Muggerville.
That's right. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. I love it.
They brought chemo back.
Well, they dropped chemo on Bloodhaven.
Oh, wow.
During Final Crisis. During Final Crisis, he served as a nuclear bomb. They kicked him out of the back of a plane. That was his, wow. Yeah, that was his coup de grace. It wasn't his choice. They were just like, walk over to the back of that plane and then just kick him out.
He's like, in all fairness, he's just a vat of chemicals.
Right.
So intellectually, he's like he's like 5 or 10 IQ points below Baby Huey.
Right. God damn it. Yeah, he's just dumb.
Hey, this is summer fun, man, and we're going to have some fun with this.
That's right. Well, speaking of, we do need to wrap her up. We've gone the width and breadth of our summer fun episode. We've done it justice, I think.
We have done it justice with a side of spaghetti.
So why don't you plug us up? We're gonna get out of here, let you guys get back to your summer, and we'll be back next week. I believe next week we get back to some pretty heavy stuff, don't we?
I believe so. I looked at that earlier in the week and promptly forgot, but
you and me both. I was too busy looking up awesome bad supervillains.
But yeah, we're going to be building toward we have a couple more regular shows, and we've got another story arc coming your way.
Yeah, baby!
And this one's going to be a lot of fun, and there's a lot of stuff coming up that we're getting so dangerously close to 300, which I still am amazed. You know, when we hit the 250 mark, when we're hit the, you know, every mark that we hit, I'm just amazed. But you can check all of that out over at the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com.
Yeah, you can.
And you can also look up, you know, use your Googles and stuff. You can find us, just look up, like, Hey Kids Comics Back Issue Bins, and there's a whole archive of back issues of this show from the very first one straight through to, depending on my timing, the one you're listening to now. I've arranged them all artfully in comic boxes of 50 issues per box, plus whatever annuals and specials may have come out during that time. Yeah, in our first 50 issues, we had an annual, and our second 50 issues, we had an annual. We've done 100, nearly 200 more issues since we had an annual. We finally had an annual. So in box number 6, there's finally a third annual. But the Halloween specials will be in there, the crossovers and annuals and what have you.
That's right. And if you want to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, still pretty active on there, both Cole and I. Pretty active on there. It's at HK Comics Show across the board. So you can find us at HK Comics Show. Constantly putting stuff up there. I am getting ready, and I will announce it here as an official announcement here at the end of our Summer Fun issue. Last week, or I guess not even last week, I guess our special San Diego Comic-Con Gripe Fest, Cole refused to stop referring to Jason Momoa as anything but Jason Mimosa.
That's because Jason Mimosa just pisses me off sometimes.
So I did my duty, and not since BillFingerBang.com has anything been more relevant to the world we live in. We now own JasonMimosa.com, which I have every intention of using to post Jason Mimosa recipes. So, if you're out there and you have Jason Mimosa recipes, and I will be asking on our various social media outlets as well, feel free to shoot them over. What's the email address, Cole?
That is, JediCole@yahoo.com.
There you go.
Or, I'm sorry, JCUMail@yahoo.com.
That was the more driven, specific one. JCUMail@yahoo.com with your Jason Mimosa recipes.
Sincere hope is that JasonMimosa.com will be grown to the point that Jason Momoa might send us his Jason Mimosa recipe.
I'm going to reach out to him. He seems like a decent guy. I'm going to say, hey, listen, we run the fantastic JasonMimosa.com in honor of Jason Momoa. Do you have a Jason Mimosa recipe that you could share with us? And just to see if instead we get a restraining order, either way it goes.
Yeah,
let's see what happens. Roll them dice.
We get the restraining order, we'll put it up on the Jedi Cole Universe.
That's right.
Because I can't give you a restraining order for putting up a restraining order. Because that restraining order is a matter of public record. Ergo, he's powerless to do his harm. Well, he could probably snap my neck, but legally, he's powerless to do me harm.
Legally, he's not above the law.
No.
No.
He is the law.
Right. All right, we're getting out of here.
The law of Mimosaville.
The law. He's Sheriff Jason Mimosa. The law in Muggerville.
That's right.
Commissioner Mimosa.
He's come to clean up the town and
have brunch.
Refreshing drinks. Yes, have a brunch.
Have a brunch. Jason Mimosa. Guys, we adore you. Thank you for sticking with us through all the damn near 300 episodes. We got a lot more coming this summer and then the following year. So stick tight. Make sure you don't turn that dial. And buy, collect, enjoy your comics. Cole, say goodnight to these wonderful people.
Good night, everybody, and enjoy a refreshing Jason Mimosa.
That's right. Good night, everybody.